Welcome to the all-new VM Podcast. This is where we discuss the latest and most fascinating, powerful, and disruptive additive manufacturing and 3D printing technologies with the people that invent, develop, use, and market them. Join us on this journey as we take you from voxels to matter through the most advanced applications across aerospace, automotive, healthcare, consumer products, and the most advanced areas of digital production. I am your host, Davide Scher, CEO and co-founder of Voxel Matters, the most trusted media, marketing, and market research firm for the ever-growing world of additive manufacturing. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the VM Podcast. This is the first episode since we rebranded to Voxel Matters. And for this episode, we have invited Jonas Galle, co-founder and CEO of Valkoon. Valkoon is a company that is developing a unique metal 3D printing technology. In particular, studied mechanical engineer and holds a doctorate in the same field. Through his past work at engineering firm Verhert Masters Innovation, he has worked with very unique and innovative projects. He has a great passion for mechatronics, PCB design, data acquisition, and processing and production methods. So he started this company at the end of 2016, but the company has a particular history and, again, a very unique and different technology, which is exactly the reason why we want to know more about it. So, Jonas, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, actually, the honor is mine. Thanks for having me, Davide.
Thank you. And so let's start right away with understanding more about the company, the company's founders, and how it was started, and your plans in general.
Yeah, sure. Well, let me actually start with why Valkoon actually exists, and because that will set the scene for the rest of it. So, the goal of Valkoon is to bring metal additive manufacturing towards industrial level. So really making metal AM as an industrial process, making it or letting it exist next to state-of-the-art technologies like milling, turning, grinding, and so on. So in the end, we would like to have metal AM in every workshop. That's basically what the goal is of Valkoon. And so that's how it's related to how we started. So when I did my PhD, I was working on a side project, which was the development of a new type of rocket engine. So this rocket engine is not really of much relevance, apart from the fact that all the parts that were made by myself. So when you want to get something in the air, it needs to be lightweight. A rocket engine becomes very hot, so you need complex cooling channels and so on. So I realized rather quickly that standard milling and turning was not the real or the best method to make those kind of components. So that's how I got in touch with metal AM. But there I saw that these technologies were very expensive. And I didn't understand completely why. I tried to find the answer, but I couldn't find it. So the only way to find out is to come up with an own ID, which you think will be better, and figure out whether it's gonna work or not. So that's how I got started. Basically, I applied for a feasibility study from the Belgian government, got it granted. After the end of the feasibility study, I saw, yeah, there is potential, this is going to work. So I decided to go all in, basically. And then around that period, I met again my co-founder, Jan de Pauw. I say again because we studied together, but then our ways separated, meaning that he did his PhD in mechanical engineering. I was in electrical mechanical engineering. He did a postdoc and he wanted to make a startup out of his PhD research, so to speak. However, that didn't work out. And actually on that point, we met again. So I told them about this project of the new metal additive manufacturing technology I was thinking about, and he was actually excited. So we decided to join forces and applied for an even bigger funding round. So that was accepted as well. So this was around mid-2019. And that's something we consider as the real start of the company, because we had the money, we acquired the first employee, we went to a decent or more decent building, and that's how it got started. And basically the rest is history. That's where we are today. Okay, there were a lot of things in between, but yeah, that's how we got started for sure.
So, you got good funding, you got started. So how does it work? What does your technology do different than other technologies?
Yeah, so how does it work? I will combine two technologies. So you know the Xerox and the Grove technology, which is melting metal wire and injecting droplets in order to build the part.
Yeah.
And next to it, you have plastic FDM or FFF, which is pushing plastic wire to a nozzle. So what we do, we combine both together. So we can actually say we have a real metal FDM or FFF technology, which we baptized as molten metal deposition, or MMD for short. So concretely, what we do is we feed a metal wire to a melting chamber. We melt it and we use the feeding force to actually extrude the material in fully liquid states in a controlled way, and that's how we build up the part. So yeah, that's in a nutshell how the technology works.
And exactly how can you go into detail how it compares and how it differs with other wire-based AM systems on the market?
Yeah.
You mentioned Xerox there also. What about the other ones?
Yeah. First of all, I want to be very careful with the word exactly, because we know that other big companies in the market has tried it, but they stopped their attempts. We know the issues they had, but the difference that we had the solution for that. So these are things we have patented, and part of it is, of course, the company secret. So that being said, if you compare it to the different other wire-based AM systems, I would like to make a difference in three of them. Like, we have WAM and wire DED, which I consider very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the metal FFF, known as the affordable metal 3D printing mm-hmm. technology, and the drop on demand, which I refer to as a Xerox and
Yes.
Grove. So if you come back to WAM and wire DED, there are some big technical differences. Actually, what we do is the opposite of WAM and YDD. So we actually apply molten material to a solid part, whereas WAM adding a solid material on a liquid part, meaning the melt pool. And this is very crucial, because that means that we separate the energy required for the melting in an insulated print head, which causes the fact that we need less energy density inputs. Why is this important? Because that results in a lot of properties where we are, I would say, better than WAM, in the sense that we have less deformations and residual stresses. So we can use very thin build plates and don't have to use wire EDM or cutting technologies to get a part from the build plates. We also don't have waiting time, because the fact that we have less energy input in there, we don't have issues with overheating.
Mm.
Also, by controlling the deposited liquid metal, we can very well control the solidification front, and that makes us, or giving us the possibility to go for way much higher overhangs and less supports.
Oh.
So the design of freedom is way much more interesting. And last but not least, the use of high strength alloys. These are prone to solidification cracking in WAM, but again, due to the less energy and the lower temperature that we use, we are able to handle these kind of alloys, which opens much more applications for us.
So before we get into that, into the materials and the machine itself, what you know, you mentioned before that one of your goals was to make Metal AM more cost effective, more affordable. What makes your system more affordable?
So let me rephrase the question by asking myself then, what makes part production more affordable? Because when you want to have a product on the market, in the end, the customer doesn't care how it's made, but it's the cost of the whole part that is important. So not only the process itself, but everything around. So that breaks down in three different things, meaning you have the CapEx of the process, you have the OPEX of the process, and you have productivity, which is everything around it, meaning the complete chain and the level of automation. So starting with CapEx, we don't use powders, no lasers. So the machine by definition is lower in cost. You don't require peripherals. I mean, no powder handling, less safety precautions. So that also reduces costs. The infrastructure doesn't require any ATEX qualification, so in that sense, it's also much cost-effective. So basically, if you buy the printer, you can start printing. And that's usually a mistake in powder systems. When you buy it, you cannot start printing yet. You need more capital than that. Then the second one was OPEX, which is your operating costs, and this includes the feedstock material. So wires are by definition about an order of magnitude more cost effective than powders. And you have the energy consumption. And there, I want to make a comparison to the Xerox machine, because we have an installed power for our first machine of 2.3 kilowatts, whereas Xerox has over 40 kilowatts of power without the chiller. So these are things concerning operation costs. And then the last thing, which is usually overseen, is productivity. So the adhesion on the build plates doesn't require cutting. So actually you can basically manually crack off or pop off the part from the build plate, which enhances the automation level. You have less supports. The floor space is also something that's very important when you talk about industrialization. We are using, for the first machine, about 1 square meter compared to Xerox, which is around 2.5 square meters, and Grope is even bigger. And the possibility of doing hot swap. What do I mean with that? So when the part is printed, it's still hot, but you can already remove it from the printer. While in powder bed, you have to let it cool down, you have to suck away the powder and so on. So with a hot swap, you can actually put the part in already heat treatment if necessary, or let it cool down while another print can already start. So these are all the things that relates to more affordable, economically viable product process.
Fantastic. And so, to kind of put it into more commercial terms, when will the machine become available? And if you can give us some information about both the machine. So you mentioned some of the features, but maybe also if you can give us an understanding of size, capabilities and speed and things like that. And also what kind of business model do you intend to implement?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a very common question. We get a lot, so I can answer that right away. So our first machine will be available by the end of the year. So in that sense, I would like to take the opportunity to officially start the pre-sales from this podcast. Thank you for that opportunity, by the way. We also will be present on Rapid to take pre-orders and discuss more details of the specs of the machines. So the first machine, you could consider it as a beta machine, which will be very open, meaning open materials, open parameter sets, open data acquisition, meaning all sensors that are being measured can be accessed, and even open nozzle and print heads. Why I'm saying this is because the machine is basically a high-end FDM machine, right? So okay, the focus is on metals, but in the end, you could use also plastics for that. Maybe ABS and PLA are a bit more expensive to use with this machine, but big materials, high performance polymers. I mean, everything. everything is there, the enclosed hot environment, the temperature resistance, and so on. So for this reason, we expect that this machine will be deployed mostly in research and R&D institutes. So that being said, our second generation machine will be available by the end of 2024 and will be focused more on the industry, because our goal is to get every machine or metal AM in every workshop. So we are actually working towards that, of course. But they prefer a more plug-and-play system. So that about the first two generations of machine. So in terms of specifications, we are, in terms of build volume, very similar to Xerox and Grok to start with. So in that sense, we are very similar, but we are more cost-effective.
I see.
So yeah, our price is less than half the price of a Xerox and a Grok machine.
I see. But what about, you mentioned, of course, and we're going a little bit into the future now, but, you know, you mentioned the industrialization, making the system available for industrialization. Do you envision, you know, production facilities that have multiple machines, and how would that work?
Yes, we do. And actually, so the roadmap is now two machines that I talked to you about. Mm-hmm. We have two more in mind, which are really going to focus on serial production. But in order to do so, the process and the machines need to have high reliability.
Sure.
So that's very important, because you don't want to have issues during the manufacturing. So having a print farm or industrial machines next to each other that do, which are have automatic loading and deloading to make lights out factories, that's really something we focus on for the big industries. Sure.
Absolutely. And one other thing, I don't know if I understood correctly, but do the parts come out to near net shape, or do they come out pretty much complete? Like, how does that work?
Depends what you want. Depends what the application is. We have applications which are more for design, where they really want to see the different layers. We can adopt the process to see nice layers. We can adopt the process to make really technical surfaces, but those need to be post-processed if it requires sealing or whatever. You can compare it like casting. It's the same question. Usually a couple of surfaces need to be post-processed, threads need to be made. So it all depends what is the function of the part. We all always refer to quality is fit for use. So yeah, I hope this answers your question.
Yes. No, I understand, of course, that it really would depend on the application. So now let's get to probably one of the most interesting elements of your market, of your, which is the fact that you will be focusing a lot on. Well, first of all, I wanted to ask you which materials you support. You talked about the high performance alloys, but also I know you have a big interest for aluminum products, so aluminum materials. So if you can tell us a little bit more about your material strategy.
Yeah, so first of all, generation one machine was open material. So rudely answering your question would be all type of materials.
Mm-hmm.
that's
right.
Melting temperature below 800 degrees, let's say.
Okay.
But we will provide preset parameters for aluminum, the 4000 series, like 4043, 4008, which are like casting / welding alloys.
Mm-hmm.
And we also go towards a 6000 series, which we will make available, for example, 6061 and 6082, which are high strength heat treatable alloys.
Mm-hmm.
And these are known and desired by the industry.
Yeah.
That's why we actually focused on these alloys to make them available even on the Gen 1 machine. So, and we will work towards other alloys, mainly aluminum, in a short period of time, which is 7000 and 2000 series, which are a lot of used in a more high-end industry. But that this will be more for the next generation machine available in 24.
Absolutely.
This is currently our roadmap for the short-term roadmap for the alloys.
Fantastic. So in particular with the 661 and the 4000 series, which application segments are you targeting now, and which application segments will you be targeting as your main focus for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, so mainly we target applications for which the combination of additive manufacturing and aluminum makes most sense. I mean, if you can provide a lot of added value for that, you don't have to be a real cost driver in that sense. So then we come up with heat exchangers. So that can be heat sinks, liquid flow, heat exchangers, or catalytic converters, as well as manifolds like valve intakes, hydraulics, and so on. And then the other ones like the near-net shaping I mentioned before, and cost replacements. These will be more parts that are really prone to supply chains and stock requirements, as well as up till a certain amount of parts per series. Yeah, and so for the near-net shaping, we have a rule of thumb based on all the business cases we calculated that above 70% of milling, more or less, then it makes sense to actually look to our technology for first printing the near-net shape and finishing it off with standard technologies. Being said this is without optimization for the process, so I believe there is more value to add here.
Excellent. And so where, because a picture is worth a thousand words, and seeing things in person is worth even more. Where would people be able to see your parts and your technology? You mentioned Rapid. Which other appointments do you have in your launch, your marketing plan?
Yeah, so biggest event we will show, actually the machine will be on for next this year. We'll be on several other events as well where we will walk around, let's say, with a couple of awesome parts. But the main event for this year will be for next.
Fantastic.
You're always welcome at our facilities, to see what we're doing.
Fantastic. I'm definitely very much looking forward to meeting you and seeing the technology up close. I think this is all the time we have for today, but it was a very, very interesting conversation, and the appointment is set for Next and everybody else.
And Rapids.
So this. Oh, and Rapids. Sorry. Yes, of course. Thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Ciao.
Bye.
Bye.